extremely
ready. We're extraordinarily ready, everyone, to start this exciting learning journey together. Because our time narrows rapidly.
Indeed it does.
And
I'm partnerless.
You're partnerless. Well, that's okay, because you don't need a partner for the quiz you're about to take.
In fact, it's better.
Yay.
Because the curve is going to be really shifted downwards by those zeros.
Take a card and pass it down.
Hooray, meaning
I'm not going to get a zero. If I get a zero, that's not cool. So, yeah.
Ready for biology, too. Really. Thank you for making me wait. I don't know.
Is it cool if we take an open book?
Pardon me?
Is it cool if we take an open book?
You know what? No, thank you.
It's
you have no problem with an open book?
Yeah. Cool. I doubt
one of them have the book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yes,
pass that over to
PDF might as well be.
Yes, since this is a graded quiz, let's have your name on it.
Open PDF file.
So,
yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Computer.
Here comes the question. That's not it.
According to the authors, how do they define embedded narrative? TikTok. This is it. The only question.
Single question. You're missing your quiz. There's your quiz paper. Move that in really quickly, please. Old-fashioned technology.
Just the top question, the other one's just preceding us into the discussion today.
Yes, this is a one question quiz. Let's finish up. No essays.
Pass them to Professor Clayton upon completion.
When I get back from the break.
And my pen.
Trying to arrange a meeting with one trouble. I get back from the break about science and
technology.
Oh, good. Good. Because I may want to already hit it undergrad or I may want to look at it like as a minor.
That's cash.
That was beautiful.
She's very nice.
Okay. All in.
Are all these
all
in?
So that one fails. Rip it up and hand it back to
them. But for people who are 50 or above, our quizzes are automatically A's, right?
Okay.
That works out for you, Jim. Is that okay?
That works for me.
Okay. Embedded narrative is on page 383. So you see it's about the first column, second paragraph or so down in the reading. Embedded narrative is a pre-generated narrative content that exists prior to a player's interaction with the game. designed to provide motivation for the events and action of the game, players experience embedded narrative as a story context. That would have been something you could have hearkened to on, about, or around.
Does it resemble any other concept we've discussed this semester?
Well, it could be like one of those emergent games that just have a rule set base. And then
so does that sound like embedded narrative to you, the emergent game?
Progression.
The progression game.
Emergence is the opposite.
You're rolling in the right direction, Dan.
Yeah.
Right. I view that as their term, essentially. But there's a slight variation. What's the slight variation on their term? Between progression and embedded narrative.
This more focuses on the story as opposed to the gameplay?
That's probably true, in fact,
I believe it is, in fact.
Yeah. I would also say, just so we won't spend time on this, Matt's got a lot to cover, I would also say that you could have an embedded narrative in an emergent game, whereas a game that is progression-oriented is the whole game's progression. So I think there is a difference there, but embedded narratives do tend to occur more, or rather, embedded narratives are the only narratives in a progression game, particularly. Sir.
Is that entirely true? Because if I'm playing a game of chess, which I think we discussed,
which we discussed here, mm-hmm.
is like the struggle between the players could create a emergent narrative.
Extra textual narrative.
I think they go
well, Miller's excited. The way they cite Miller inside the context of the chess example that Dan refers to is that, all right, there's a beginning state, there's the transformative motions that are actually what he would consider to be the narrative mechanics movement from one to another, and then there's the end state, how things ended up at the end of the change.
Right.
Right, and so that's something we're going to discuss here quickly. I'm going to take just a few minutes, death by PowerPoint yet, to summarize some of the concepts that I think you need to walk away with that will continue to inform your game design. While I'm chatting away and we're discussing, bring up your Neverwinter Nights editors if you have them in class. Pull up whatever material you have so that we can continue our design and discussion journey. You may also want to look at the smart board, some of Derek's handiwork here, so you can continue to think about the spatial orientation of a game, because you have to start thinking about where your areas will find themselves manifested as people track through the land. And we want to talk about, as we come out of the discussion on narrative play and the rules of play, and we conclude that, we'll jump into the editor, and I want to show you a couple things that I want you to attend to. I'm going to introduce you to how to export resources today, because we're going to do that after Thanksgiving break, the second and last day of class. Then our intention is the last day of class, I will have stitched everything together over the weekend that preceded the last Tuesday of class, which is December 9th, and then we will collectively walk through, as a group, the space together, Fairy Queen Online, and we'll see how everybody does. We'll have it uploaded into the Vanderbilt server at the end of the semester for us to go through as a group. And so that's the plan. So get your editors up and let's continue. Professor Clayton, anything else before we dive in? So, as you're bringing your editors up, I want you to consider a couple things. This is really sort of a summary straight from the text. And as of this afternoon, I'll have this PowerPoint uploaded for you to reference as well, if you have an interest in that. But what kinds of narrative experiences do games make possible? Just think about the narrative experiences you've had in a game, and ask yourself the question that they posed at the beginning of the. Sorry, are the game stories, are the stories games? Because one of the things, and I'll skip to the end of this, have you guys ever got out of a game and gone and told your friends your experiences within the game? Everybody? So give me, tell me, go ahead, Professor.
Have you ever gotten out of a game
and cried?
And
I have.
And wished you could tell your close people about the game and been unable to for fear of abuse.
Final Fantasy, yeah.
So what's the example of we have to separate Jay's situation from the rest of us, because all of us are surrounded by gamers. But what What are examples of some things you got really excited about that you felt compelled to tell a story? Did anything that come to life?
I was playing Elder Scrolls 3, and my character was sort of a roguish, sneaky sort of character. So I've been robbing and murdering and up to no good in the big city. So police were after me. And so I had this really prolonged, like, half-hour escape, jumping over buildings, swimming through canals, and then getting back to the Thieves Guild, running across a wall like this big to avoid the authorities and getting back and not getting caught. And I just remember being really excited and telling my brother about it. I'm like, it's the best escape ever. I'm the man. You can't see me.
This is going to probably tell you. When I was playing Neverwinter Nights for the first time, and I was like that warlock, I ranted forever. Like, I was just so mad all the time at the game because I didn't think it was very well done. And I was a warlock, so I was peeved. And then I became a barbarian, and I described those events with much more glee.
What was the difference between a barbarian and a warlock? I mean, they both are in the same game space. What was the big difference between the two of them?
Point and click versus point and click, and then kill things versus point and click, and things break, and then everyone dies.
No, that would be because you were a warlock.
Yeah, that was
because you were doing it.
Well, there's some mechanical issues as to why a warlock was more, shall we say, survivable in the context of that game space than the barbarian, or vice versa.
Vice versa. Yeah. Because
4 hit points versus like what? 10 or 12.
Yeah. Actually, a warlock is like D&D.
Really?
Yeah. This is my man. Right here. He knows.
Of course, barbarians can teach well.
With Final Fantasy X, after I finished the game, I was upset. Like, I just wanted it to keep going. It was like the best movie, quote unquote, I had ever been a part of. Because they put you in Titus is the main character, Titus, however you pronounce it. And they put you in his shoes so well. And you're new to the world just as he is, and you learn everything and just become attached to the game. And it's just so much fun. I miss that game so much. I want it to keep going. And they made a sequel, and it sucked.
Yeah. It seems to be a common trend.
You felt betrayed, didn't you?
Yeah, no, the only Final Fantasy to ever have a sequel. It was awful.
So there is something outside of the game, right? I mean, you want to tell your story outside of the game. Is that a mark of a good game, or do you have this desire to tell the experience if you've had a bad gaming experience? I mean, is the story, can the story transcend a bad game?
Yes.
Yes.
It is.
You got an example or anything you think of?
Pac-Man World 2.
Pac-Man World 2?
Yes, for GameCube. It is the worst game ever made. And then they made Pac-Man World 3, which is possibly even worse.
What is the story of Pac-Man World 2?
I don't even know. You're supposed to go and kill somebody named Irwin.
Irwin?
Oh.
Irwin.
Who doesn't want to kill Irwin?
Well, let's use Colin's example here in the context of Silent and Zimmerman. There's some attributes of narrative play. There was a situation. What was the initial state in which Colin found himself with his rogue?
In trouble with the authorities, with the Popo.
Okay, so but there was something in flight, right? There's something. The Popo's after him. And the situation is set up. Colin has violated some form of law.
Pretty much every form.
Every form. He's a rogue in every sense of the word.
They basically say, like, you can resist arrest or go to jail and serve your sentence.
So he made a decision there, right?
Well, no, they never caught him.
Oh, really?
What are some possible outcomes? What are the possible outcomes, possibly, for Colin in this case, and his avatar and his virtual self?
Death.
Death?
Yeah.
Imprisonment.
Death, imprisonment.
Fine.
Success.
Success as escape.
Escape.
Okay, so was it what? Were you 100% certain that you were going to escape? Mm-hmm. What does that do to
you? Uncertainty. Uncertainty is what makes it fun. Because if you know it's going to happen, why would you play the game?
Yeah, but if you might die, why would you want to do that? I mean, his little avatar could have been virtually imprisoned, or worse yet, dead.
I disagree with the uncertainty. Maybe a little bit, but have you never replayed a game? And
I've
been like, I know exactly the guy's about to talk
I've
out right
Final
here.
I've replayed Final Fantasy X 100 times. Like I've beaten
Were you uncertain about what was going to happen next?
No, but that's because I love the game so much.
There's still uncertainty in the game, though.
There's
but just because the storyline may not be uncertain, there still are random elements in the game.
Individual battles. You may not win that battle that you won before.
This is kind of harkening to this emergence discussion. The character is the way Silent and Zimmerman say it, it's a personification of the events. So we're going to use your rogue. You gave us an example of the rogue. the events is what is going to transform the person's end state, right? Incarceration, death, escape, status at the end of it's your outcome. So everything that happened, what was something you were, what's the opening scene, Colin? How did it?
The opening scene.
Give us this opening scene.
Paint the picture. Well, I remember being, I don't know how many of you guys have played Elder Scrolls 3, but the big city is a series of like pyramids coming out of the swamp. And so it's really dark and murky and everything's torch lit inside. So I remember being in there and trying to walk out and just noticing, not police officers, I forget what they call, but just blocking pretty much every exit. So started panicking a little. That, I guess, was the opening scene, was in this dark, torchlit room. Like, what do I do now?
And what was the first decision? What was the first decision that you had to make?
Well, the first decision that I had to make was what I was going to do to get a price off my head, which was get to the Thieves Guild, which is based back in a town really far away.
So your goal was to really traverse a big distance.
Right.
Without getting
caught.
So your first choice was what?
I don't remember how I actually got out of the building. There must have been some way that wasn't being watched. But there have been paths around that you have to take. They're basically taxis, like on the canals. There are people who will shuttle you. Except I had so alienated all of the shuttle drivers that I couldn't actually get them to take me where I wanted to go. So I found myself basically jumping off these pyramids into the swamp and just
swimming. Did your eye have a name, or would you just call it Colin the Avatar?
My eye. I'm sure it did.
Well, Colin the Avatar was faced with a series of choices. He started in a place of danger where he had a potentiality to be captured. Evan said there's an uncertainty there, and there's also uncertainty in the outcome of whether or not he's going to make it to that Thieves Guild. But there's a conflict, right? There's some conflict points along the way.
Yeah.
What are the types of conflicts that you experience as you try to... Did you have to fight?
No, I actually managed to avoid anyone that would fight me. I did try to persuade one of the canal shuttles to take me. I forget what they said. It was basically like, no, I hate you. I'm going to call the police. Go away now. So that was definitely a conflict point, because that had been my first plan, was just take one of those to the city exit.
So the three elements I draw your attention to, kind of wrapping up this short description with Colin. There was a situation. Colin found himself in an initial state. Through a series of events, he traversed space and time, and a series of uncertain moments and conflicts had occurred that, at the end of it, there was an end state. There was an outcome where he found himself in a, yes, I've escaped this danger state, which led that desire to retell the tale to this day where he's telling it to a group of people.
Which I never, ever would have foreseen. I didn't finish that. I'm like, I'm going to tell this to a freshman college class.
That was our goal.
I will tell my grandkids the story.
In terms of the game elements, there was some kind of context that he set up for us through the opening of his discourse with us was, I'm in this city, pyramids, swamp, and there's police surrounding all my exits. So there was a context that established. It's hard not to think about the context. Is the starting context, your initial state, important to the telling of your digital tale? And if so, in what way?
Yeah, you need to enlighten, I guess, whoever you're telling to, or else they're just kind of baffled as to what's going on. They can't really dive into your story or listen to you if they're confused.
Think about this one. We've all seen Star Wars, the old school Star Wars. What is it, Episode 3? 4? What's it, Luke Skywalker, Episode 4? Luke Skywalker, the ones when you actually pioneered the strange scrolling text that fades off into itty-bittiness over time. Galaxy far, far away, right? That's how it starts off. What if you came into that opening sequence without any text? Would you have context appropriately established to start that movie?
No.
They give you so much in that. Like, you know it's in space, but that would be about it. You wouldn't really know what is going on between the different...
The future. Right. Feels like the future of Earth, or...
You don't know about the relationships between all the people in the world. You don't know.
I mean, having that text allows them to open with that big, exciting first scene.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, you'd start with that scene, and you'd have no idea what was going on. Like, why are they attacking this little ship?
Who's a good ship? Who's a bad
right,
ship?
Exactly.
So context can be provided through some openings, and then there's some context that can be provided through transition. We talked about these in example of the cutscene. We're going to talk about the catapulting. Sal and Zimmerman mentioned this catapulting. Sometimes you need a cutscene, or sometimes you need a dialogue presented to move your story forward. Were there moments in your rogue quest from point A to point B at the Thieves Guild where you had dialogue or cutscenes or something that helped you move your stay forward?
There was a part. I didn't actually walk the entire distance between the city I was in and the place I wanted to go. They have big swamp striders, which are enormous insects that will carry you through it. So luckily the guy who ran those, I hadn't completely alienated. So I hopped on that, and there was a loading segment while I got from one city to the other.
So are there loading segments in a novel?
Sometimes.
Professor, like the time passage methods or, you know, and Bob traveled 500 miles, and then the next page Bob shows up 500 miles later?
Sometimes at like the end of a chapter, they'll leave off somewhere, and then maybe they've got somewhere. I can't think of an example, but I don't.
24 hours later, they woke up in the next chapter?
Well, a lot of times they'll leave something off, go to another character, and then the next chapter you'll come back in a conversation.
So crash.
The original characters, and that's a new situation.
So these game elements that we have to add as cinematographically or in the context of a novel, as narrative unfolds, you have to provide some form of transition, state movement. If we're believed that a situation opens in an initial state and is transformed to an end state through a process of events personified through the actions of a character, then you have to provide context to keep people mentally engaged in the movement of the tale. I think that's where this article, my intent is to help you inform your thought processes around the game design. How does that lead you when you design your areas and you design the people and conversations associated with those NPCs if you're telling a tale or if you want to start that expression in the context of Fairy Queen Online? Not to answer that yet, I'm going to flip over to another concept, but this is what I want you to think about when we move into that. Dan?
Before we leave narrative, I always want to ask, we're given a definition of narrative at the very beginning of the paper. Now, under that definition, what is not a narrative?
I'm sure if I could answer that. Professor, do you want a
very big question?
And what's the answer that you think?
I don't think there is one. I think it's all-inclusive, and I don't like it because of that.
I think they actually talked about that, where they said it was clever because it included games, but it also includes, like, everything else.
Because
so you
about
go, oh, it applies to games, but then if you think of it,
the recollection of your life, right?
Yeah.
Would real life be a narrative under the story, because there's nothing really symbolized or personified.
No, but we're getting visual symbols and stuff. We're getting, like, what does it say, modulated sound symbols for our oral history. So,
but,
yeah.
Not really visual symbols, because they are what they actually are. It's not a word that says person, it's a person.
But then if we're watching a movie, are there symbols in the movie? Yes. And they're visual. Okay. This is the same thing as life.
Does a class have a narrative?
Sure. It has a beginning state, characters, and an end.
And that's life. So this debate goes on a lot of places, and not just in this reading. And some people think, essentially, everything is narrative, that narrative is the fundamental substrate of human existence, and that you even, you know, you your identity, you know yourself as a narrative, that your sense of identity is itself constructed, even, you know, at the neurobiological level, by a kind of narrative habit, not just habit, but impulse. Other people say what I take to be your point, which is that if it's everything, it's nothing, and that makes it useless as a definition.
Right.
And so you prefer, and I think all of us have been acting on narrower definitions of narrative. But it would be very hard to visualize any language that was not some, that couldn't be redescribed as a narrative. Because a subject and a verb is an actor
and
an action. So, you know, but at that point it becomes a ridiculous issue. So we've been focusing on more pragmatic definitions of narrative.
But, so then do we accept that this isn't all-inclusive definition of narrative?
We accept that that's what they provided you in that reading.
Yes.
And this is a concept that, you know, we're making the pairing narrative play.
Right.
Right. We're having a game and play experience, and we think that there should be a narrative expression in that context.
We're not just defining narrative.
It's, it's not a narratology course, and it's not a narratology discussion, but it's how do we tell our story through the in this medium.
So then, but then if everything's a narrative, then isn't like any game going to tell a narrative, no matter how arbitrary
it is? So we are not accepting their definition.
I don't like their definition.
Correct. I think we're largely in agreement that we don't like their definition.
How do we get away from that?
We bracket it and say we're using a more pragmatic definition of narrative in this class.
All right, cool.
Ben's going to send him an email. Then we'll chat a little bit about what we can do after class. The player experience. Let's talk, you know, we have some of the exciting debate about narrative. I think if you read Salen and Zimmerman, you're also going to understand that there's a great deal of debate in that context. As more and more people from differing fields, whether it's sociologists, narratologists, English literature folks, come into these areas of ludic studies and look at games, ludology, they're going to all bring their perspective of these things to the game table. So from our perspective, we want to talk about, and you've got a lot of personal experience, players experiencing the game. You know, Evan, when you talk to your Final Fantasy world, was there a pre-embedded narrative that started off the Final Fantasy?
You can't really veer off from the narrative much until you really get on the airship, which is pretty far into the game. And even if you do veer off from the narrative, there's still a main storyline that you have to complete to beat the game. And you want to because it's so awesome.
And this is this whole embedded and emergent. If who has the most power if a game is predominantly just a series of choices related to an embedded narrative versus an emergent experience? Where does the power sit in terms of narrative creation? I don't want to be too restrictive in the question.
The developer. The
power to the programmer.
In which one?
In the developer and the embedded. The player and the emergent.
Yeah. And I think we've had a lot of conversations from Jesper Jewell related to this. And that's something to consider is, if you're trying to tell a particular tale in your area, or you want to have a very limited amount of choices and you're going to drive them to a funnel of narrow choices, you may be loading up your preconception as an embedded game designer versus someone allowing for an emergent experience that is much more. What's the game you play, Justin, it seems like it's very emergent? It may be Elder Scrolls. What were you doing all the modding in?
Oh, well, that was Elder Scrolls 4. So, it's embedded in the sense it has a main storyline, but it has so many emergent elements that you just allows you to create your own story outside of that.
Is there a time within your Lord of the Rings Online experience, those of you who played fairly actively in particular, that you've had an emergent experience in the context of Tolkien's world? I mean, there's a bounded, embedded narrative in our Tolkien Lodro.
Absolutely. Every quest besides the main quest is basically an element of emergence. You can do them in whatever order you want, whenever you want, no matter what level you are. But sometimes, obviously, you can't complete the quest. It's too high.
And that still feels consistent with that Tolkien-esque surrounding in Lotro?
It's not consistent with the story that he wrote, but you're making up your own story within his world.
There are also like things like escorting a lower level person to another area that they couldn't get to by themselves. I mean, that's not even something set up by the designers. It's your own, you know, thing that you're adding to it. And I mean, and I even think it fits with the world. It wasn't any kind of, it's more emergent because it wasn't anything that they designed into it.
Pushing the envelope of what the developers expected, some unintended consequences.
Yeah.
They probably knew that people were going to do that.
Well, they know it by now, yeah. But when it first, first came out, maybe they didn't intend for people to kind of be shuttling everybody along. I know they didn't intend that in Diablo when they originally made it, but you have people rushing through higher levels, helping lower levels get through the game.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. In terms of design choices, is there in this... I want you all to kind of get in on this and at least everybody have an answer or express an opinion on this question. Is there a value judgment? Is there something better about embedded relative to emergent? Are they mutually exclusive? Do they cohabitate? What do you think the value is between embedded and emergent?
I think it's biased based on which you really grew up on, so to say. Like, I'm biased in the fact that I loved Final Fantasy X. It was like by far my most favorite game, and that was more of an embedded storyline. So if a game has a good storyline, I'm looking for embedded, but at the same time, immersion is awesome too. It's just whatever you prefer.
So really, there's no objective judgment to which one's better.
Right.
To say one's better than the other is a little misleading.
I think they go together. I think the general consensus nowadays is if you can have both,
you win.
You want both.
Yeah.
Do you need both?
No.
Agree.
Yeah. Actually,
almost.
You need both, but you need a balance between these two.
I think you do need both.
Some games emphasize embedded narrative, some games emergent narrative, and it depends on the type of game and, like...
What does Fairy Queen Online mean, do you think? The Fairy Queen Online, as we progress through this development cycle, should it be a very restrictive path that it goes 1, 2, 3, and you guys control the pace at which the player unfolds, or do you want them to just go crazy?
I think it should be a mix of both, because if you don't have any embedded narrative involved, then there's really no story, so to say. You're just doing whatever you want. It's like,
that's not like, look at The Sims, though. Is there really an embedded narrative in that?
No.
Well, I guess
they
mention more embedded narrative, because...
They do mention all that.
Are we trying to create a game where you're just living life in the world of Fairy Queen?
Hey, guys, don't talk over other people.
We put emphasis on the story of the Fairy Queen, and we have a restricted area, and it's not big enough to provide as many immersive experiences as we can. So I think it's more embedded.
I agree. I think we should design it more for the embedded, because we're trying to do Fairy Queen Online as opposed to a Sims-like game.
Same.
I was just going to say, when you're taking a book and putting it into a game, I assume we're talking about the immersion experience being like wandering outside of the story and kind of going and like killing random stuff, I guess, or like doing stuff that doesn't follow it. It's like an element, I guess, that you'd have to make up or like kind of add to the story, because it doesn't like explicitly say, and this is like Lord of the Rings too, it's not explicitly saying like, over like that day they went and killed some boars and like wandered around Shire. It was like, it just follows a specific story, so emergence is kind of the element that you have to add to the
play. I'm gonna challenge on these in terms of, I'm gonna walk through the what would be an example of emergent, when we show our map and then talk through what, you know, if we started with Britomart, Arthur, and Guillaume, if we start there, you can't do anything until you pass a certain criteria. A dialogue with Britomart, an action witness, and you can't go to the next stage. You couldn't run to the edge of the map and then go on without meeting that step function criteria. That would be more of a witch and the embedded narrative, right? So it's tough in this context, as Sam points out. Anybody else from this end of the table before we move on? Okay. Meaningful play. We talked a little bit about conflict and uncertainty. Fairy Queen Online, if you're leaning towards this embedded model, conflict and uncertainty, your combat is going to be your conflict and uncertainty moments.
Just an idea. We could have some kind of chase, like mission, so to say, where if we're the character of Britomart, when you have to chase something, maybe make it a difficult chase, like you'll lose them sometimes if you start over, or just, that's an idea of something being difficult besides simply combat.
But you could add
stuff.
You could add games within the context of the game.
And we don't necessarily have to follow the exact plot of Fairy Queen, but we definitely want us to stick around it. We don't want to veer too far off. I think Lotro might be a little too far off the storyline in comparison to what we want.
Right. So you want to keep it a little bit narrower.
Yeah.
The mechanics in the game space. We talked a little bit about the how and the rules. The rules, we're using a Dungeons & Dragons underlying rule set, so they will affect, and this is what Dan was alluding to earlier, your experience and enjoyment of the game. If you choose a warlock versus a barbarian, there's some underlying rules that govern your transformation. He found his warlock transformed into death probably quite a bit.
He certainly did.
So that he couldn't progress. Even enjoy the embedded content, because there is a series of sequence quests, but you couldn't meet them because the rules said warlocks in this particular circumstance aren't going to function that well.
Oh, but also, I mean, the game... never mind, I'm sorry, this is a tangent.
Yeah.
So the mechanics do matter in terms of how you do it. We made a decision last semester, which we're kind of carrying by default. We had a decision point in a discussion, which we hadn't had in here, that this is almost like a perspective issue. Third-person omniscient. We never really talked about the perspective issues here at all, I think, during this discussion.
I realized that when I said, like, we're Britomart. That was weird.
Yeah. Well, because we did say, do we want to be Britomart? Remember this conversation, Jay? I mean, we've made this into more of an observational, externalized. You're not the Forester, you're not Guillaume, and you're not Scudamore, you're Britomart. Think about the game Fairy Queen Online if you assume the role of Scudamore.
Yeah, we can pick who you want to be. I don't know. Like, see, that's a little complicated, but...
Extraordinarily complicated.
Well, I can't be He's going to lie.
But it's just, I want you to think the boundaries of the possibilities, the playing field, get shaped by that personification discussion. Transforming Britomart is much different than transforming Scudamore, much different than you transforming a beginning state, the transformation of the end state, by being an observer and sort of a active participant in the, or even if you're peripherally participating in the events you're witnessing. So punishment and reward, there usually is some form of punishment and reward system. Colin had, what is his reward? From the rogue experience.
Awesome story.
The awesome story is a reward right there, and the freedom of his avatar. And pacing is important. If you had to wait 3 hours or 2 hours from event to event, you may turn off your enjoyment of... Professor Clayton knows these. There are reset timers in LOTRO for certain game mechanics, which can change the pacing of your emergent gameplay. You can't have a story, hey, I killed... What's one of the big bosses up in Carn Doom? Or you might get a... What's that?
Right, like Helchum.
You can't kill him 17 times a day. There's a timer lock on that, right?
3 days.
3 days. So you have to wait 3 days before you have another emergent experience as a group. And
he only drops
that
one item, of course, and it takes six of you. And you often all six die, which is called a wipe.
Right. So talk about that.
Has Corello killed Helchum?
I have.
Oh, ooh, yeah.
Did you get the drop?
He had to go several
did
times.
Did you get
to
slime?
No, well, that's what I was there for.
Yeah, because there's a slime and then there's a weapon.
So there's a reward.
Two
rewards that you potentially could have got. So game, space, and mechanics. Carn Doom is a place where you don't go at level 20. So you're making a boundary to people based upon how much emergence and progression they've had in the game based on the mechanics. So mechanics do definitely impact your narrative. You guys who are level 15 and level 30 are necessarily excluded from certain components of the game space based upon, and rewards and punishment based upon the mechanics. Do you see something that you would want to do that required a progression within the Fairy Queen? Do you have to take a Spencer quiz every 6 minutes to progress in the game? These are things you can build in, games within games.
Yes, yes.
Please define the Spencerian stanza from the three following selections.
I think that would just...
That would be emergent.
That would take you out of...
It's embedded. These guys want embedded stories. There you go. This is embedded.
Anybody out of the class would immediately turn off
the game. Yeah, it's just like, wait, was that just like more than...
Turn off the game at that point.
So I want you to think mechanics do affect how the narrative unfolds. I think you expressed that, but that Carn Doom example really says most of us in this room aren't going to get there. We're certainly not going to get there unless we have a shared emergent experience with another group of people. So good digital narrative. We're going to kind of conclude this so we can get back to the Fairy Queen Online. Yeah, I read their chapter on good emergent narrative, and I said, okay, I don't know how to say it. You know it when you see it, right? There's so many different variations and preferences. You have so many different people that may be walking up to your game and playing it. If you guys have ever been in an MMO space, who knows what the Baron's Chat is?
Oh my God.
Okay, so proportionally, this is this WoW area where all this asinine prattle goes about. So every time you go into a new MMO, space, everybody wants to criticize the other games. It was a good game, it was a bad game. Here's why I think this sucked. Here's why this was super. You know, so. You know when you see it, each of those people have they're possessed of a different opinion. They're equally valued as mine and yours because they're just experiencing fun.
But they're noobs.
And they're noobs. And this is another noobs. Opinion. Yes, they're a bunch of noobs that you're going to pwn. So, the amount of narrative. How do you interpose narrative? We talked about dialogue. We talked about cutscenes as a catapult or as a reward. Cutscenes can be a reward. Hardcore gamers, do they view cutscenes as a reward or a punishment?
That's totally objective. I mean, it depends on the person.
I think yes. Hardcore gamer.
In this text.
In the context of the Silent Zimmerman, has a whole sidebar of hardcore gamers.
Right.
It also depends on the timing of the cutscene, because I was playing Final Fantasy IX once. I was in the middle of this epic battle, and then it goes to a cutscene that lasts for like 20 minutes that really accomplishes nothing.
Could you get out of it?
No.
You had to. So was that a reward or a punishment for you?
It furthered the story, but it's just like I couldn't finish the battle. Like the end of the battle was in the cutscene.
So like ending game cutscenes would be the reward, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I finally get to see, you know.
So these design decisions are, you know, I like the books in LOTRO, because I play LOTRO when I'm in the mood for quest-driven story. I'm more geared towards the embedded tracks, particularly these epic quests in these books, you know, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. I like progressing through those stories, and usually the reward for me is that video cutscene. I don't know if you have any good examples of that. Those are some great ones that I've seen that I enjoy. I work through those to actually get to that cutscene.
In fact, books 11 and then book 14 in particular have quests that you're part of that are sort of hybrid cutscene quests. That is, that you go with the main character while and watch him do something. Do you recognize what I'm talking about, Carello? Have you done 14 or 11?
No.
Oh, okay. But it's a very interesting design. I was just thinking of it. I'm sitting here with the load screen for Lord of the Rings Online, the new Mines of Moria one. Have all of you all seen that? And that's Durin right there. And one of the quests in the Mines of Moria is you go with Durin and watch the Balrog kill him, and you have to escape alive yourself.
That's crazy.
And so there's sort of both adventure, but also, you know, he's called Durin's Bane. So you get to watch. So it's a kind of hybrid that is an interesting idea for how we might handle some Spencerian narrative, like the Mask of Cupid. You know, you'll be a player in that space, but clearly you're not going to walk at a little parade or something. Or maybe.
All of these things, to just wrap this up, all of these things, you'd see, first of all, how you could spend not just one semester, but two semesters and four semesters and an entire academic preparatory career working towards this design discussion. There's a multitude of design decisions that you have to make. You have to talk about your target audience. One of the target audience in here certainly was last semester, knowing that there's going to be another class of freshmen in a writing seminar that they're using purposefully to have this conversation around Spencer. There may be people out there, we at least know of 90 people before this class who downloaded the previous incarnation of Fairy Queen Online, and I know after you add more stuff to it, it'll go from 90, it'll go to like 270 after you guys finish it. Yeah, so there'll be another, you know, 150 people after you guys put your mark on it that are going to now have an experience with this one way or another. What experience do you want them to have?
Pretty sick.
Badass.
Want to beat some heads over pretty much.
So all of these things could really influence the way you make some choices here. Should it get with your teammates and continue your discussion about your assignments. The other thing is bear in mind your geography. You guys need to come up with an assertion on where you're going to be spatially oriented. At what point do you feel, talk amongst yourself, that your area is going to manifest itself? Where is it? What's going to be the previous space from which you jump into your area? That's a question I want you guys to answer right now amongst yourselves. Where's the preceding area? And I want you, if Professor Clayton and I were to ask you, why did you make that decision? Use Spencer as, to the extent that it's possible, to help you justify what canto, what chapter, what verse you're making that decision from. Because there will be a blog topic, your last blog topic for the year, It's going to talk about your design assumption. I show you those areas of Mithrandale. You're going to write a little summary as a group, as a team, for your blog topic this time. So go ahead and continue with your areas, your NPC discussion amongst yourself. We're going to give the rest of the class. We'll be here to chat through it individually. And
so are you going to wrap up? Because I have a question specifically like that.
Really? Fabulous.
Let me finish one thing. Hey, guys, I forgot to show you one thing. So let me have your attention back before you go jumping in here. When we finish this, you are going to export the areas. I want you to just try this at home, not now, but notice up on the screen there, file. You'll see on this file list, there is a export command right here. The type of items, this is extraordinarily important for us to be successful
together.
Everybody
focus in here. Lee, that
means... you click export? I'm sorry.
File. Okay. Export. Don't need to worry about where you are in your editor. There's several things you want to be able to export. If you develop a conversation, I want you to name your conversations. Please try to remember to do this. CON underscore. That tells me that when you save the conversation, it is a conversation.
You must take notes on this right now. So, because this kind of code decision is crucial to Matt being able to upload
Stitch them all together.
The stuff together. So we need to have a uniform file naming system. So, take notes on this. Conversations or con underscore and then something really descriptive, not just con underscore one.
But like look at it here, con underscore Red Cross one, Red Cross two, Red Cross three, Red Cross four. Those are four of the knights with which conversations are paired. Con Brynemark. Okay, just anything you can think of, as Professor Clayton said, con Matt Hall's mine, we'll have one for Professor Clayton and so forth.
More than one piece of dialogue.
It's up to you guys, however many dialogues. If you want your dialogue published in the next iteration of Fairy Queen Online, you're going to take that and then you're going to click this button here. Under the conversation type, you click add. I'm going to go over this with you again later, but I want to make sure we have at least one exposure to it. You have all these things. If you were to do scripts, same thing with scripts. If you have an area, select the area that you're going to export. The things you work on is what you're focusing on. The things that you worked on is what I want from you. Areas, and then creature blueprints. So conversations, scripts, and creature blueprints and areas are what you're going to be concerned with. And then just export it, for example, if... Where is Malacasta? Malacasta. We export her. Okay, and then I just want you to export it as, for example, Team 1. Right? Just your team number, Cool. All right, so then that's all you need to do, and then we'll be able to do it. We'll be able to take those together. One last thing, when you're doing an NPC, notice here in the lower right-hand corner, it's going to be hard to see because everybody's head down there, but look over here, FQO NPC is a category. So the NPCs have properties associated with it. Under the Basics tab in Classification, please do this for me. Type in FQO space NPC in all capital letters. That will make sure that all of the Fairy Queen Online specifically created blueprints are there for me under one category to look at. That's going to make our lives a lot easier. And if you wanted to put any comment about that NPC, if you wanted to assign your team name to it, your attribution for so that it preserves later in life, go ahead and put whatever comments you want in there. There's a lot of
Your own name for that.
Absolutely.
FQO space NPC.
Correct. Cool. That's it, guys. That's the mechanics. I won't expose you to anything more than that, but just wanted you to have a little bit of exposure to it. And off you go.
So is Fairy Queen itself open source? Like, can we take Fairy Queen online as it is and then put our stuff into that? Okay.
Yes.
That's what you want us to do.
Yeah. Well, what we're going to do is I'm like the master integrator. And on in that SourceForge site where this the open source is publicly available, we've got a revision. I'll get all the work from you collectively, we're going to grab it all up in those ERF files, the encapsulated resource files, which is just an export of your elements that you've developed. I'm going to stitch them in, and the important thing for you guys to talk about in terms of your spatial orientation, I'll go ahead and put the hooks, the transition hooks, from area 1 to area 2. Or if your conception is click this object and the whole group teleports somewhere,
like
I'll
the
do that.
Tapestry, for
like
example.
The tapestry, I'll do that. I just need to understand that.
And so
chat.
Your question is the code that you download and give to Matt and he puts into SourceForge open source?
No.
Oh, it's not.
My question was, are we creating our own game space and then putting our specific assignments into that game space, or are we taking Fairy Queen Online as it exists right now and putting into that?
Fairy Queen Online is an additive process. So we're taking the base Fairy Queen Online that we started last semester, mm-hmm. we're adding your elements to it.
I know, but our
your area will be new.
Right, so we're creating our own area.
You're
yes,
creating
so
your own
area,
and you're putting
they're
your
not
own NPCs.
Something previously. The operative term I use is it's additive and building upon the previous
right.
work.
So what's your area? Your team has an area?
Inside Kessel Boosterang, Mask of Cupid.
Okay, so you will be when you people port in from Kessel, the door of Kessel Boosterang, they yeah. will port into the area you create. You see?
Yes. Not that I fully understand, but like I'm misunderstanding to the degree that I can ask a question.
It's just in here. And we'll talk after class.
Can we maybe see the team's again so we can know which number we have?
Yes.
But where's that going to be?
For you, Jim, of course.
Okay.
Start working. If anybody else asks, absolutely not.
Speak quietly together, but feel free to speak. You all are your design teams. No, did you find that map?
There's two different. Oh, you want the team.
What?
That is such one?
Yes.
It's like referring to some other Merlin's Cave.
No, no. Merlin's Cave is up by Tintagel. I made that for a fact. And Tintagel is what? Scotland?
I don't think my room is
yeah. So Merlin's Cave is on the seashore.
I remember how our river was almost a lot.
I think you're too close. So. Why didn't y'all sit together?
Too much technical
flaw.
Right?
Yeah. But I know it's not hard.
So, and so are you making Merlin's Cave?
No.
Okay. Who's making Merlin's Cave?
Where have you found it on the map yet?
One is like these two are doing an interior of Castle Boosterang. If you have the interior, did you win the interior? If you're the interior, there's no other discussion. We'll place them inside your interior, the transition. And there's a tapestry.
Yeah, I don't know how to
you may have to figure out where that is and collaborate with them in some regard.
Here's my extension of the inside of Castle Boosterang.
I don't know. It's interesting.
What do you have a
question? The castle itself is being made by
Lynn, what are you guys doing?
Now, at the same time, use your right click, you can start doing that.
Right, I knew how to do this.
Who
are
you doing?
I don't know if I like, my point. I'm stuck
external castle.
I want to look.
Merlin's Dream Gate.
Oh,
Oh, even Merlin's
you can take off on the same.
What are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing the Garden of Domus.
Isn't that the Garden of Domus?
No.
Alright. You guys are the Garden of Domus.
There's some castle models. It would be very difficult to do a custom castle with the wall components. You have to be extraordinarily in love with tedium to do that. It's under properties. I can't remember if it's edit properties or file properties, something like that. But it's a general setup capabilities of the game.
Just like find Diana.
Alright, so when's this due? This is okay. Yeah, it would be
Tuesday, December 9th is when we're going to go. Actually, so it's Thursday, whatever the previous Thursday is. We're going to finish it all up in class. We're done.
To May.
So work back from there.
How she came.
So today's the week that we get back from
the week you get back from break. Tuesday, December 9th is the last day of class. So get your calendar out, look the week back from that previous Thursday from that Tuesday, December 9th. That will be the day everything's done. We're complete, solidly concluded, unless you had a change of that.
There we go.
Sure.
The problem is, were we talking about a design workshop next month, Monday, that we back?
We cleared the calendar, but we don't know if we cleared that stuff.
Yeah, Matt Shelton, we got this here for us to know.
Do you want to look at Matt
Shelton? I think I got his question answered.
The question is, today's our last chance to tell people about it.
When you went and started the
right. Thing, I don't know. Right. Let me finish what I'm doing here.
I'm going to think about it. Then we can use Facebook.
December 4th is the deadline. Yeah, so the end of class on December 4th, we'll start like in the last 15 minutes or so.
I know.
Class, get everybody's ERF files
because
out.
Because look, Scootamore,
so that I can take on Friday, but I can grab them all up and then integrate them so that when we come back on Tuesday, we're actually all going to go to the server.
Maybe it's like her nickname.
We're all playing Greymark?
No, you're all playing whatever character you play. It'll be one of your local characters.
Oh, it'll be one of those characters.
Or we can
then we die to boars.
Yeah.
As I have.
Or I may just
Or you can get that level 18 fucker.
Maybe
own some boars.
Or I may just make everybody roll a character and so there is level 1. Whatever Amir says, he's the final decider.
It's true. I mean, yes, it's true for our group. It's true for this class.
Yeah.
It is true for our group.
That's a very
anyway.
True group.
I would paint.
Dan, you're a hoot.
I think I've been so tiny.
Okay. Matt, just random. See, we're going to have random NPCs rolling about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess
for the Master
of the Last, are we just going to do something different? How do you want to do this?
I thought you wanted to do a cutscene of, like, I thought you wanted the whole match.
while that would be freaking neat, I actually want you to be able to interact with the characters.
No, but you're supposed to paint this. So,
you have
Velphoebe
and
Amaretta.
Is this Amaretta the same?
Yes.
Okay.
He's just for convenience of metrics.
Okay. That's what I thought. Maybe
no,
just.
No, same for
me. If I could do it, I make it.
That makes it much
better.
Okay. So is poetic license.
Well,
I think that's a good question.
People have names.
Oh, sure. Professor Hall.
Sir?
How old would you like to work?
Exactly. And then Arthagal and Arthagal are spelled differently. The same person. Arthagal is the more.
To the extent that it's possible, do what you can, but don't.
Yeah, that's why
don't lose the don't
yeah.
lose.
But I think I used a different spelling of
energy. Trying to worry about.
There was one that had a Y.
Yeah, I go with that.
Have a walk into the
Was there a Y? But you know, spelling was just the printers did the spelling.
Yeah, it was just
enter
and then what about with the I?
And then I think it calls it throughout it here as well.
She can go around the room.
So it's just.
So this is. Spelling kind of.
Designing Venus and Amber. Now, we have Garden of Adonis. Thing is, though, I don't think we should have Amber in the Garden of Adonis because she's been captured by Usurin. And
does she appear in the Garden of Adonis? Or just
she does, but the vehicle that we're using the Garden of Adonis to be is an after-death vehicle, and then to kind of an area where you can take in the Garden of Adonis.
You can also force dialogue. If you use Lilac Soul, you can actually have
and then time dialogue at your leisure back into the game. If Amaret was there, it may just be kind of like, why is she here when she's supposed to be captured by Usurin? Because like in the beginning, maybe like okay, she died.
I got an idea.
And then at the end, like
who's working with you, Lynn?
Yeah.
But you can use a conversation.
This conversation.
Run into it.
Yeah.
It's easy to do.
What are your opinions too?
But then if I do something like assign an owner to the conversation,
are you working on something different?
If I do that,
I'm trying to figure out how to make it over it.
But he's talking about not making it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were. Yeah.
So. You're making a Venus.
Is
that, we don't know which ones are
there.
Yeah,
yeah.
The
Venus. Derek, were you all planning to make a Venus?
What objects are
in people's
placement?
Okay.
Well,
Venus and
physical
Amber.
Manifestation.
What are other characters?
Sidetrack.
Well,
they really start with a simple
one. Because it's the generation of life is what it is.
See, what
masks
everything?
Yes.
Lots
of different
formless
you could just have all this you get to have chimps, stags, creatures, elves, whatever you want to just populate in this area. That's what's saying, like, I think Amberith is I think Amberith has the last one.
There's
along the path
of music, and there's ambient noise. What they are, they're sound objects. You drop a sound object in the area,
and we can have a beat and speak over, maybe, like,
assign a sound to the sound object in the area.
Where does
it will be a radio as to when you encounter the sound, and it'll, it goes, obviously, the core of it is the heaviest. That's the one I like.
The Garden of Adonis.
There will be two gates. But I think in order to get there, you're going to run up against a circular your shape is determined, and then the geography of Venus is in a certain place. You all are going to have to do some reading to remind yourself I think it's a great notion that somewhere in that space you have a kind of
But
these
are
more characters that you can write.
Just
put
your mask.
Yes.
Generally,
not like not, like, not this. This is my picture. Populous. Not too colorful. Not the word.
It's
cheery. Exactly.
Yeah, I can see
what
it is.
It's
not happy. That's what I was thinking.
So maybe you all are making an Amorous Does anyone have Amorous? Who's making the inside of Bucerin's castle? And are you make, do you have Amorette?
I don't think we expressly called her, but it makes sense that we would make
her. Yeah, why don't you make Amorette? Okay. Let them make Amorette. But Venus is your name. We want to be the Venus. You have to decide between Botticelli and which of your
observers
you've got to want. Some art history.
We'll have to make them a little happier.
May I have your all's attention? I need your attention, Kyle and Jim and Derek, etc. Chris. Monday after vacation, Monday afternoon, are there any of you all that would be free to come to a design workshop helper session with Matt Shelton that afternoon and me? I'll be here.
What's the time?
Right
here. Can be more specific.
What? Pardon me?
What time?
Well, what the, I, you know, we got the whole afternoon blocked out.
I can do that anytime after 1 o'clock.
What about later in the afternoon?
Band?
I can't
what time is it?
That's the first day of class.
December.
Will we not?
What?
Okay. Is that the first day?
It is December. It's December.
I'm in December,
second first or second, something like that?
If I may suggest, why don't we, like, find a time and then, like, send out an email and then have responses?
December 1st.
Just because...
Because it's easier to figure out what...
I don't have my schedule in front of me.
Right. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to propose on Facebook a time, if Matt Shelton can do it, on that first Monday. You all are going to have be working this week. You know, you'll have this week away, which some of you all maybe can do some work on it or not, just depending. But at any rate, that Monday back here, it'll probably be later in the afternoon, more like 2 to 4 on Monday. So put that in, keep that in your mind. I hope a lot of you all can make it. How many think they can, if they're free, how many of you all will plan to come? Excellent. Okay. So I'll just hope to get a good time
for
you.
Your blog topic up on the
There's
board.
Your blog topic.
This should help you in your design process. So we'll also put it in the syllabus, but I just wanted you to leave. It's up there for you to review as you exit the building.
When is this blog due?
As soon as you can get it done.
Like this Friday?
It's a team effort. It's a team. So I would suggest you get it done by Friday. Same group.
Wait, this blog is due tomorrow? Next Friday?
No, this Friday. Yeah, this
like
Friday.
Tomorrow.
So, wait, do we have to put this in a blog sometime?
So,
I have a buy this tomorrow.
Do we write one in the book?
You want to make it a blog for a week from Friday? Okay, blog is going to be due a week from Friday. Because, I mean, the Friday after we come back.
Okay, good.
Because you guys are ready to go on your vacation.
Wait, this is doing
what?
Is that Black Friday? What's to go to that shopping day.
I don't want to disrupt the shopping.
You can write it on
Thursday.
So is the Friday during the break?
Yeah, I got single.
No, it's not going to be during Friday. Okay. It's going to be the Friday of the week after we get back.
All right, so that's the one.
The blog is going to be on?
All things will be revealed in the syllabus.
Nothing's due tomorrow. Nothing's due tomorrow.
Hey, now let's talk about reading.
Class is over. Thank you for coming, guys. We appreciate it. Have a lovely Thanksgiving holiday weekend and week.